And we're live. Welcome to another episode of PBJ, this time on a Wednesday.
On a Wednesday?
Isn't it? It's a Wednesday. March 18th. What's that all about?
DK doesn't even know what day it is. That's a good sign. It means you're living life right, my friend.
We're just being polite because we know that a lot of our audience probably are March Madness fanatics.
Of course. Of course they are.
So we did not want to disrupt your Friday college basketball viewing.
Yeah, we know you tune in for the Presidio basketball jam every week. So yeah. Here we are on PBJ.
My tweet saying that I always find it amusing when people who have never engaged on a tweet of mine finally engage on a tweet and what does it take to get someone to like a tweet of mine?
Yeah.
This one got a couple of people come out of the woodwork and like be a first like for one of my
you know my sports fans are then.
Yeah. It's probably people who don't really care about Bitcoin and or at least the in the weeds Bitcoin. Yeah. But they do like college basketball.
So I like that.
But we also actually have other reasons.
We have other reasons. Although
there's an event that some of us are going to Friday, sort of our sibling organization in the Bay Area, Localhost, which funded by Mark and Wences, just
doing
like Presidio Bitcoin. They're having their 1 year anniversary, so we're going to go hang out with them. And then one of us, I think, might have a trip or vacation or something.
I love how whenever Steve wants to play it cool, he just stares directly at me. And says,
You're the only one. You're the only one in front of me.
I'm not going to say who it might be in this room. Of the two people at this table, it's not me. No, he's right. I'm going to one of my very best friend's wedding, so I'm pretty excited for that.
And you're just going to be out for 1 week, right?
No, just a couple days. Yeah.
Okay.
Just in and out.
You'll be back in studio Friday.
That's the plan.
But Iowa State literally plays at 11:50 a.m.
I knew it.
Friday.
Yeah.
Exactly when we normally do PBJ.
So this worked out.
It worked out. Thank you.
And I do have to say, I have not talked much about basketball because this season has just been horrible for Memphis. Just absolutely horrible. The worst season in 60 years. However, I want to say Penny Hardaway's coming back. So
I saw that.
I'm happy.
Getting rid of a staff or something.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where it's always
throw everyone else under the bus.
And this is the third time that's happened. But so it's always kind of shitty. Although, you know what's interesting is, the basketball itself, I really like the kind of recruiting stuff. And it's interesting, actually, I believe it was Ryan Gentry, who's also in our field. And one thing we bonded over is we both had growing up and maybe still subscriptions to premium message boards for the Rivals insider recruiting info. And recruiting, it's shockingly, something we sort of bonded over, it's very similar to VC. It's the exact same thing, but you're just, you're building a team.
Portfolio.
Is he a Longhorn?
Yeah, of course. He's hooked them all day.
They won last.
They did?
Yeah. They had a play-in game to get in the tournament. So.
Yeah. But anyways, all that to say, my hope here is, to me, the most interesting part of the season is building the team. I think that's quite fascinating time. I love Penny. Penny's been one of my favorite people, players, my whole life. I'm rooting for you. I hope you figure this out. So much love coming from here.
Awesome.
I know I've been sitting patiently, quietly here, letting the sports talk go. But I was going to mention, as a listener to the show, I'm hearing a lot of ringing or something. Sounds like Fuji's vacuuming. Are you guys hearing?
I guess we'll have to close. We'll suffer the heat. Thanks for telling us that.
It's
the lawn.
Okay.
Apparently we didn't, we need to get networked with the lawnmowers so that they don't do,
that's why we don't do this.
We didn't tell them about the schedule change.
Yeah, so. Exactly. They're getting ready for March Madness.
We're dealing with, this has a cost and a benefit. We're going to be scorching hot right now. So you'll probably see us sweating during the show, but it'll help. The allergies have been awful this week. I'm suffering. Oxygen Max is here.
Sauna with Max is always a good thing.
So,
I guess it is a sauna.
Should we pause and head on over and get it set up there? Anyway, hopefully closing calendar. The windows will be less pollen, less sneezing. So that's the benefit. And no more lawn.
It's been, for those of you who don't know the Bay Area, it's extremely unusually hot right now. Also, it's just weird all around the world. We've got severe weather on the East Coast.
There's a heat dome right now. I think
blizzard in the Midwest. you know, scorching sun here in California. Like, yeah, it's we're definitely accelerating through some some weird times. The singularity is here on many fronts. But
I saw Palm Springs is at 110, yeah, highest ever recorded in March.
Yeah, I mean, we're still in the 80s, maybe 90s. But regardless, now there's like in my house, we constantly are going back and forth. You know, I'm hot, and Roy, our beautiful the CFO of Hivemind, our chief love officer, he gets really hot. So we're team open the windows. Anjali's team, once a bug comes in, she ain't about that. So,
you know, oh my God. It's a challenge. That's what I opened the windows too. And this bug, probably about 10, 11 inches long, came into my house. I don't know what it was.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It was.
Is there a bug? I didn't know there was a bug.
It was
long.
Huge. And it flew in. It was on the wall. It's kind of slow and dumb though. I like got a mop and like just easily. Usually I look like the idiot trying to like kill something inside the house or like remove it.
Oh no.
But this thing was easy prey.
Team remove. You can't be killing big dumb things. You gotta like sweetly carry them outside.
I usually carry things outside.
Handle it with the graciousness.
It was not possible.
It was
very fragile. So anyway.
Anyways.
By the way, before we even get into stuff, we already have questions. So let's we love audience engagement.
Yeah. Jump in, yeah.
Leonardo asks, will Square really turn on Bitcoin payments for 4 million merchants? The answer is yes. I think they need to be eligible somehow. So it's like, so I believe it's like some very large subset of this. I don't even think it's supposed to be announced yet, but they...
It came out though. I saw it on Stacker News.
Yeah. So I think they enabled it for like a portion of customers, like a normal type of rollout.
Yeah.
And those customers got an email and one of them was Matt on my team who then posted it.
Oh, that's the way this got out?
That's my understanding.
Oh, wow.
So apparently Spiral leaked this secret launch or something. I don't know. But anyway.
That was with the alpha always.
So
this always sort of the plan was you wanted to first like kind of trial it a little bit with manual turn on and then with enough acceptance and agreement that this was good that it would kind of get out to everybody.
Sorry, what? Or like, what? Why is it happening now? Why didn't it happen last fall? Kind of thing.
Well, yeah, like I think, yeah. When did the thing first come out where you could, like, a merchant could manually enable the Bitcoin?
November.
Yeah,
that was November. Okay, and so is it happening now as a broader rollout because that has proven to be a success?
I mean, I think there's a number of steps and boxes that need to be checked.
And just so I understand what we're talking about, it's just that like the QR code that they show that will always accept Bitcoin. And I as the consumer will always have the choice to choose, am I using the Bitcoin network, whether I'm using dollars or not?
I believe there's everything I'm saying like is not firsthand knowledge. So
we're just speculating, no insider info.
I'm
the guy that works at the company.
But like it but the original rollout in November, you know, there's like a Cash App Pay QR code and then there's a separate like Bolt 11 Lightning QR code.
Yeah.
And so the customer either needs to know to ask for that or the merchant needs to know to like redirect to this different UI. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's changed yet, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's hope that that becomes a cleaner user experience. Maybe they've addressed that already. I don't think so though.
Yeah.
So it's more just that the change here is that you don't the seller doesn't have to like actively opt into enabling Bitcoin payments.
Cool.
It'll automatically be enabled. But I'll caveat this with. I mean, it's a nice win, but I don't think it's just like one of many steps needed for success. Because they still have to opt in to be put on BTC map. So they don't automatically get opted into being shown the map. They don't automatically acquire awareness. They, meaning sellers. They don't automatically become aware that this exists and is possible.
On there.
They don't automatically get sold on the idea of like, oh, this is good for my business because I can save fees and maybe increase my profit margins by double-digit percent. They don't automatically develop a plan to create awareness for their customers to pay over Lightning. So all that still has to be done. So right. like the Bitcoin merchant community that Sviol started and a lot of the initiatives that Square is doing and like what all of Bitcoin community should be doing, we still need to do it. We still need right. to have advocacy, evangelism, convince small merchants. It's still going to be a grind. It's a nice win, but it's just one of many things that happen.
Well, just so I understand this correctly though. So, I don't know if it's live already or when it will be live, but let's say I go to any Square merchant. They say, hey, check out here. I see the Cash App QR code. I can then pay from Cash App and use Bitcoin Lightning Rails.
Well, that's what I was saying. It's two different flows. So the answer is no. Okay. And I don't know when those will merge into one. Maybe it's part of this launch. Maybe it's in the future. Maybe never. I have no idea.
If it's not part of this launch, the idea would be I would still have to ask the merchant, yes. hey, can you pull up a Lightning invoice?
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay. Which
yeah, that's way less cool.
Yeah. But hopefully sooner than later, it's that merge experience. And then the merchant, doesn't need to be aware. I assume the default would be that everything's converted to dollars because mm-hmm. that's the most yeah. conservative play for the seller. Because otherwise you're putting on you can't default to receiving Bitcoin if the seller doesn't even know about it or care about it or want exactly. that or yeah. their accountant doesn't know or whatever.
Yeah.
But again, like I think without awareness and advocacy by sellers, the ceiling for this is simply a very small group of passionate Bitcoiners going to a store to pay in Bitcoin just because they think it's cool and because they want to advocate for it. But that's a small TAM.
Yes. Right? But I wouldn't underestimate. I mean, obviously, you see the vision where this is going, but I'll tell you, like, especially let's assume we get that like unified QR code where I, as the end customer, can make the decision unilaterally. The merchant doesn't even know. Like, in that yeah. world, I mean, I'll tell you right now, I mean, I go to Square merchants all the time, like literally every single day, and I will be using Bitcoin 100% of the time from Cash App, Bitcoin Rails. I'll be using dollars. I don't want to like sell Bitcoin. I'll be using dollars. They'll get dollars. And then ideally, I'm assuming they'll have some flow where it's like, yo, you just saved 3%. Want to know why? Learn more or something like that. But even without that, I wouldn't underestimate, even though we're a small group, we're like a rabid, passionate group. Yeah. And I'm sure there'll be some like kickbacks as well, like on both sides eventually. But like even with no kickbacks, everyone here at the office, I mean, that's whatever, 20, 30 people in this community, they're going to be going out there doing it every single day. Like, I think it could grow pretty quickly.
I think it removes a lot of friction too. Like I was just pitching a local merchant here about using Bitcoin. So, I was purchasing something from him. He has a Square terminal. I said, oh, I'd love to pay you in Bitcoin and then you can save 3% in fees. He's like, oh yeah, I already do that Bitcoin thing. I was like, oh, great. And it turns out the Bitcoin thing he does is he takes his treasury and moves it, some percentage into Bitcoin. But he doesn't have his terminal enabled. So I think if it did become more of like a default, it'd be, hey, I just paid you in Bitcoin. He'd be like, oh, cool. I didn't even know about that. And then I'm like, hey, do you want a biddy? And I think in a sense, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm not sure that would be my next line, but okay.
But hey, you kept an extra 3%. Maybe that's...
Don't worry. It's just an itty.
Yeah, okay.
We start them with the itty bitty, hook them, and then they get the biddy.
Hook them horns. All right. I've had two merchant interactions in the last couple of weeks. And these are people that, I mean, I never want to push anyone too hard. And like increasingly, Deacon and I have talked about this. Like I definitely want to, put the seed out there. And when people are ready, I want them to come to me. But, I don't want to be the guy that's like, oh, hey man, where's your... So yep. at my farmer's market, there's my chocolate dealer who's on Square. Super cool guy. I would say at this point, we're friends. I mean, we chat about all kinds of things. Whatever. Like if there was anyone that I feel comfortable just as like, hey, like dude, like turn it on, it's him. And I've mentioned it multiple times. He's interested. He's not anti it. He even told me, he's like, oh, it's probably better to do it when the price is low. Like it's better to buy when low than high. I'm like, yep, all these things are true. But every time I see him, I could tell last time he got nervous. He was like, yeah, I'm feeling anxious. I know I haven't turned it on yet. And I was like, we could just do it right now. He's like, yeah, but my wife, she runs the register and like, she's not there. And but if I could just say like, bro, can I pay you in Bitcoin? He'd be like, of course. So that friction of him having to convince his wife, go to a settings bar and then it's hot and we can do it now, but he's got customer, it's just never going to happen, but he's not anti it. He would do it. So that to me is a win as soon as this is possible. My tea dealer, same thing. She thought it was cool. And She was here up in our office. So she's not anti-Bitcoin. She knows we have brought lots of business to her because she does great tea for our last Type 1. Amazing lady. And yeah, and we're also homies.
Your dealers, like how many people in your life do you refer to as a dealer?
Yeah.
You've got a tea what? Dealer,
Biddy,
your honey dealer.
I've got DK, my meme dealer.
Oribot, Satbot's your meme dealer.
Yeah, Satbot's my meme dealer.
So maybe...
Matt Belez is my alpha dealer.
maybe the Square UI needs to emphasize like these payments received had no fees, right?
100%.
Because if you're a seller,
yeah.
And you don't even know that this has been enabled for you, and you don't even necessarily know that customers are paying this way,
yeah.
If it's so seamless, right? So you're just simply unaware.
Right.
But then if you can see, if it's prominent in your UI that, exactly. These are zero fees.
And why are these
zero fees? Exactly. Oh, it's because of this. Oh, I should promote it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and if there's like ways to encourage people. Yeah,
exactly.
And then every week I'll be like, hey man, aren't you glad you made 3% more? And be like, yeah.
Yep.
So
anyways.
Big counts.
So another thing we wanted to talk about today and sort of segue from this is about Bitcoin branding. So there's like different things that I'm hoping to discuss. And one actually is with Bitcoin merchants. Like the Bitcoin merchant community, they reported some experiences where they would go advocate to turn this on with sellers that use Square. And I think it's a small proportion, but a very emotional small set were like vehemently opposed to Bitcoin. They just had this like very instinctual hatred of Bitcoin, you know, whether rational or not, probably not. But anyway, that's how they feel,
right?
And so Bitcoin really, you know, they didn't. It for them, it was a bad brand, that they didn't want to be associated with.
Yeah.
A second experience that I brought up is that maybe move itty bitty into the screen.
I was about to say. Steve turned his back on this little creature. So now we're going to bring it back?
Spiral's own little itty bitty.
Bring it
back.
He says he was kicked off. He's done. He says no.
We've had itty bitty on our set. And I suggested we move him off our set. And I'll explain why in a second.
He turns his back to you, Steve.
Yeah. As he should. And then Max, you've had some experiences recently. You know, one of our goals at PB on this show, bridging the gap to Silicon Valley, more engagement with tech and AI, and bigger tent for Bitcoin. And we've been experimenting with different approaches on how to approach different segments of people. And you've had some experiences where you felt like people we want to engage with, and we think they'd benefit from that engagement.
Definitely
get turned off from simply seeing the venue name is presumed Bitcoin, right?
Definitely.
Right. So all these different touch points. And then I think we've even talked on the show about some of our different approaches. You know, obviously having like the Type 1 Energy Summit here, AI hackathons here. We've had a lot of positive experiences as well.
Super positive, yeah.
But let me start with this. Why did I suggest we boot this little dude off our set? I was scrolling through LinkedIn, and Presidio Bitcoin has an account there. We promote the show there. LinkedIn, like Bitcoin Twitter, is not where we're going to attract tech people to this show.
And by the way, we've said this many times in the show, LinkedIn is where the alpha is, straight up.
But LinkedIn is where like tech people...
Everyone's on LinkedIn.
Well, I mean, tech people are maybe on Twitter too, but they're unlikely to see like Bitcoiners' tweets. But on LinkedIn, they'll see stuff that I repost or any of us repost or whatever. And the screenshot there, you know, this is super, super prominent. And he is really cuddly, and I mean, I'll speak glowingly about this guy in other contexts, but it really depends on the audience. I mean, let me start with like glow. So I have seen women and children love this guy in particular. Like kids love it. And even Square, like sellers, many sellers love it. They put this up. Once they turn Bitcoin payments on with Square, they put this on their counter, and it's like a great conversation starter in their store. And for a lot of sellers, it's not a turnoff. It's just a super lightweight way to start the conversation about, oh, we accept Bitcoin.
Right.
So there's many audiences where I think this is like amazing. But when I'm scrolling through my LinkedIn and I see that picture and that's what stands out,
right,
beyond like the three of our faces, this stands out. And anyone who has this, and a lot of tech people, like I'd say the majority of tech people are kind of, are just turned off by that because they lump it in with Sam Job, you know, SBF and crypto and FTX and Web3 and all this like nonsense.
Yeah.
All this like fraud and scammy behavior and like not adding value to the world. And so that's where we get lumped in then. And then, and so that I suspect there's a huge portion of people then who wouldn't give our show a chance. But if they actually listen to the show, they'd realize we talk about AI and tech the majority of the time.
Totally.
Bitcoin's just lightly interwoven into what we talk about. Yeah. And it's not like any of us have like given up on Bitcoin. We're as passionate about Bitcoin as we ever have been.
Right.
We're trying to reach a new audience. And also, I mean, with AI in particular, it's like such an acceleration movement.
Right.
You got it. Anyone has to get on that train.
Yeah.
We've hopped on that train. We're on that train.
Right.
And Bitcoin is part of that too. In any case, I just worry that this actually is a net negative in that context. So that's why I'm suggesting we remove it, not because we don't like that little dude and not that we don't like Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So that's one example. With the Square sellers, Haley mentioned yesterday an idea of maybe instead of emphasizing, and this one's I think more controversial, but I think it's an interesting discussion. But
controversy.
Instead of emphasizing like, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Merchant, enable Bitcoin, please. Or do you know that Bitcoin was just enabled? Instead, Lightning.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the why, but interestingly, I have been opposed to that up to date or to date, despite having a team that works on Lightning. We're huge Lightning fans. We build Lightning infrastructure. I think it's an amazing technology. I just don't think Lightning needs to be at a consumer level. It's just like plumbing that makes things work beautifully for people.
Totally.
That's why I'm like, get it out of the UI. Get it out of we don't need that vocabulary for other users and stuff. So that's been my position. It's still my position. However, I do think this is an interesting proposition. Because, Cash App also last fall launched dollars on Lightning. So 60 million monthly users of Cash App, they all have dollars. Oh my God, if Max is not aware of this.
What do you mean dollars on Lightning? How do they do this?
Don't you watch PBJ?
What do you mean though?
So 60 million Cash App customers can pay Lightning invoices.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like they don't need to be a Bitcoiner. They don't need to own Bitcoin.
Right.
But they can scan a Bolt 11 QR code, pay it, no fees, and everyone's happy, right? Yeah. So like the seller and the customer don't need to hold or care about Bitcoin.
Right.
It just happens over the Bitcoin network.
Totally.
And the Lightning network.
Yep.
So,
which by the way is what I'm pitching the merchants in the first place. I'm not saying you should stack Bitcoin for the most cases. I'm just saying, and I would even say I love this framing of like Lightning because it gets rid of all the baggage. I mean, also another thing to test would just be like turn on fee free. Like literally my pitch to them is I'm going to pay you dollars. You're going to get dollars. We cut out the fees.
Right. So it just, it eliminates any kind of preconceived notions.
Right.
Oh, Bitcoin's a Trump thing or an Elon or a conservative movement, or it's bad for the environment. You know, it takes up too much energy or it's deflationary currency will never work. Whatever your concern might be, it just removes that. Instead, you're presented with Lightning technology, which has little awareness. And it's just sort of like, it's just technology. It doesn't have anything else baked into it. So it's kind of just dispassionate. It's like, oh, I love no fees.
Yeah.
And oh, Lightning is this technology that enables it. Great.
Exactly.
And I can, people who have dollars or Bitcoin can pay. Great. I can receive whatever I want to receive. Great.
Yeah.
So I think that's really, I mean, we're going to keep discussing that. I think that's really an interesting angle. The end point is still, the end point is Bitcoin still, but like as the pitch right now, I think that's compelling. And then, let's talk about.
Think of that should be the pitch to merchants to explain to merchants what why they should enable this thing. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the right pitch that we have been promoting since November is save the fees, right? That remains consistent. Right. That's the primary pitch. But then sort of like, well, yes, I want to save fees. How? And instead of saying, oh, enable Bitcoin.
Right.
Instead, enable Lightning Network.
Yeah, turn on Lightning.
Which allows anyone with a Bitcoin wallet to pay, any Cash App customer to pay, whether dollars or Bitcoin.
It's like Visa, but free.
It's like Visa, but free.
Yeah.
And there's going to be more and more, there's going to be more Cash Apps on this network, right? Other, banks, fintech companies, etc.
Yeah.
So that's the variation here that Haley proposed, and I told her that I initially thought I was going to hate on this idea, but I'm like, I like it. So
I think it's a great idea.
Let's keep discussing that. Well, let's talk about like your experience.
Yeah.
With inviting people here, but it's something we've talked about for months now. PB is Presidio Bitcoin. It's a little over 1 year old now, our home here. It's been a resounding success.
Life changer.
Almost every dimension, amazing. Huge success.
Amazing. Yeah.
21 out of 10.
This show is named Presidio Bitcoin Jam. Obviously, it's a show that the three of us do, but we're doing it. This is not our business. We make no money off of this. We just do it to help Presidio Bitcoin, help Bitcoin itself. And
we're having fun.
But we just talk about whatever we want to talk about. Which is
for better or for worse.
Mostly AI and a little bit of Iowa State. So but the reality is, what do we spend a majority of the time talking about? AI, building, entrepreneurs, innovation.
Yep.
And it's not surprising, we have been we're either angel investors or venture capitalists. David started a number of companies before. me a little less so, but some.
Keyboard player.
But I'm always working on 0-1 types of things. So we're all like builders, early stage type of people, independent of Bitcoin. So it's no surprise that's where our passions lie. Anyway, I've jokingly said PBJ is, it's Presidio Builder Jam. And then even PB, Presidio Builder. To date, that's just kind of, jokingly said. But I do find, depending on the context or my audience, I'll say Presidio Bitcoin, or I'll just shorten it to PB. Mm-hmm. Or I'll say Presidio Bitcoin Jam, or I'll shorten it to PBJ. And if it's an audience where I think Bitcoin might be a turnoff, but I actually think they'd like our show, or they'd like coming here, or they'd like the people here, or they'd like the discussions here, by toning it down and just giving the acronym, they just eliminate a barrier for them to coming. And what we've found is, I think 100% of people who come here.
Oh, yeah.
Love
once
it.
They're here.
It's not like we're tricking people or like,
you rugged us.
rugged us. Like, 100% of people love coming here. Once they're here, love it.
Because it's freaking awesome.
Even if they wouldn't identify as a Bitcoiner.
Totally.
It raises a good question about, where's Bitcoin's brand have a place in the naming of PB, PBJ, the show, etc. Yeah. So, but maybe you can start with your story.
Yeah. I mean, I would give just a couple of points of feedback. I think there are different people. I mean, Bitcoin's been around 15 years, and so it has a lot of baggage, both good and bad. Sadly, a lot of it bad. I mean, in more traditional, let's say, tech circles, like I have all my friends from, college that are in tech are not necessarily into Bitcoin. Anjali and her friends are not into Bitcoin. And so it definitely, the first challenge I find is still association with crypto. And, I've had people be like, why are you so vehemently passionately just hatred of crypto? And it's because they have made our job of what we're trying to do to put peer-to-peer currency in an open payment network so much harder. Like just yesterday, not all the individuals on here are necessarily bad or ever, but like someone was saying this Vanity Fair Vogue photo shoot with all these crypto people. And there was the early Coinbase guy. And it's like, God, like why? And the worst part is it's like all of the worst excesses of the financial system. Like Satoshi would be rolling over in his grave. The whole point was to disintermediate the graft and the insider trading and all that stuff. And it's just like, and the worst part is these crypto people that have made so much money launching these scam tokens. Has any of them done anything besides Bitcoin, by the way? I would say, you know, but whatever, but they keep launching them. And, you know, now that that narrative is dying, I've noticed two things. A lot of those people will, you know, start calling, oh, we're into Bitcoin again. It's like, no, we don't want you, bro. We don't want you. Stay over there. But they, you know, they say Bitcoin and then they end up lumping us in with that group. Now they've started going, and there's something else that we're going to talk about too, open source AI. Like, you shared an open source AI meetup, which we love open source. Silicon Valley loves open source. I think we should push more for open source. But I looked at this open source AI, and it's like literally all of the crypto grifters, scammers, all of the VCs that have been pumping bags in what should be illegal activity over and over and over again. It's like, no, please, no more. Make it stop. Anyways, so it's just really frustrating to me. And like, there are very few things that piss me off, but this really pisses me off because I feel like I've been fighting this like uphill battle for 5-6 years. At some point, I should have equanimity and accept I can't control what other people do, but like, I don't want to be lumped in with crypto bros anymore. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. And anyways, it's made, I feel like, my job so much more difficult over the last several years when I try and go and explain to my friends who are in serious tech working in AI. As soon as they hear the word Bitcoin, not all of them, the ones that have known me for years and have seen my journey, we've talked about, they're more open to talking. But you know, immediately they just lump me in. Like, I forgot who I was with the other day, but you know, I was trying to explain, hey, you know, you should come, you know, talk with us about Bitcoin, blah, blah. Like, oh man, that's that SBF thing. And I was like, bro, SBF has, not only does he have nothing to do with Bitcoin, he went to jail because he was saying that he was buying Bitcoin, but was not, illegally. And anyways, it's just so freaking frustrating, but that's a narrative problem. So specifically the way that I've combated this so far is, you know, when I threw the Type 1 Energy Summit and we had a Type 1 follow-up dinner, which was amazing. And by the way, some of the, you know, it was Chatham House, I won't name who was all there, but let's say some of the absolute best investors in all of technology, some of the absolute top of the top of the top of the, you know, whatever, technology pyramid, nothing to do with Bitcoin, crypto. These people all came back, which means they had an incredible experience at the Type 1 Summit. Mm-hmm. They realized there's nothing scammy going on here. In fact, they like what we're doing here. They like our vision so much that they wanted to come back, but they needed to have that first touch point. And the way I got them all in the door in the first place was it had nothing to do with Bitcoin. It was doing an energy conference. To me, Bitcoin is a ledger of kilowatt hours or joules. It is an energy-backed currency. We have nothing to do with cryptocurrency, nothing to do with, you know, any tokens. We are a ledger of joules, and we're going to be talking about how a ledger of joules and ledgers of intelligence with real tokens, intelligence tokens, interact. That's it. That was extremely successful. And then so much so those people now have trust that we're not, you know, these scammy whatever crypto bros. So they come back and we're going to keep building out from there.
Yeah, that was so huge when you tell, and yeah, I'm not going to name the person, but you know, people who were, who have been top tech executives who are not, wouldn't call themselves Bitcoiners, the fact they came back again, I think is just a great data point.
Yeah, because they, like, the more we talk, the more they're like, oh, I love your worldview. Like, everything in the history of humanity, every monetary good is, in fact, a proxy in energy. Gold was a proxy in energy. The dollar is a proxy in oil. And then I'm like, Bitcoin is the purest proxy in that. They're like, well, what about, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, we have nothing to do with any of them. Any of them. And like, anyone that says Bitcoin and, you know, is in the excesses of finance, yeah, not interested. We're here to create a fair energy-backed ledger for the world. Anyways.
Right. I was going to say, I agree with all,
frustrates me.
All that sentiment. I know, I love hearing you amped up about it because I feel that same pain a lot, but I love to hear kind of your version of it. Go ahead.
Sorry. I want to read a comment, but... this is spicy. The Epstein files are connecting directly to Spiral and the majority of core devs.
I haven't seen it. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen that either. I want to hear it.
Well, Zipgun can elaborate. But I think like one of the emails, Matt Corrala was in the thread or something. Maybe that's what he's referring to. I don't know. I can assure you, Spiral had nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah.
No one from Spiral was on the island or that's in good. The ledger.
That's good. By the way,
hate on Saylor, right? He was like too autistic to get compromise on or something.
Dude, that made me love Michael Saylor so much more. Like, this man is so autistic. He can't be bought. Like, literally, I was just like, let me buy it more MicroStrategy. Like, this man, like, God bless. But that's the point. Like, we want the autists, the people that, you know what I love about autists? And I know this, they don't lie. They can't lie. An autist can't lie. If they see something as black, they cannot call it white. And God bless those people. It's just, I'm so sick of the lie. I'm sick of it. Anyways, but DK, I wanted to hear what you wanted to say.
Now I lost it. I'm loving your little Alex Jones moment.
I know. I feel like Alex Jones right now.
Should Bitcoin restart the same way as Bitcoin went to BTC? So I also don't understand what...
maybe talking about the naming?
Zipgun. So Zipgun, if you can elaborate, we'd be happy to discuss.
Wait, but DK, I wanted to hear your point. So you also... And by the way, one last thing I wanted to add. So part of the reason this came up recently is... Anjali and I have been doing more sort of dinners around AI, some open source focused stuff. I mean, you guys know, like, I'm extremely interested in compute. I'm extremely interested in you know, a lot of these sort of model companies and things you can do with it. And I want for people to see, you know, I've got this idea that I've been working on with some other friends around how do you price intelligence in energy, which means I think eventually a GPU marketplace in Bitcoin. There's a lot of stuff we can talk about that. But like, in order for people in the AI world to take me seriously, it got really frustrating where I'd be like, oh, so what do you do? It's like, well, now I invest in energy and compute and energy-backed money, which is Bitcoin. Like, oh, crypto, nah, just like walk away. And it's just very challenging to even get someone in the door with that. So this was kind of the starting point is there are so many really intelligent people who I believe would be just blown away if they start to see Bitcoin the way we do and start to see the potential for Bitcoin and AI to interact. But you can't even start that conversation if their immediate thought is, oh, you're one of these, you know, scammer SBF guys.
There's another group I want to talk about, but DK, I interrupted you. Sorry.
Just a couple other points on the Bitcoin branding label. One is, I feel like a lot of the Silicon Valley narrative, let's call it more the frontier Silicon Valley narrative. I think there's obviously the Web3 and all the different, you know, NFT stuff and crypto stuff that has kind of poisoned the well a little bit. But I think the current, let's call it the topic du jour, is Zcash and sort of the privacy nature of Zcash.
Isn't that old news by now?
We kind of joked on that maybe 6 months ago, but I think that is like, I try to invite somebody to, what was it? One of the hackathons, kind of a prominent designer, I think you may recall. And the feedback was, oh, I think you should stop barking up that Bitcoin tree. You need stuff that's, you know, more privacy oriented or that uses zero knowledge proofs or something.
I think that's I think it's already passed and it'll soon. But what I thought you were going to say is stablecoins. And I don't think that's going to like, that's not a fad that'll pass in 2 months. Because stablecoins aren't like a pump and dump. Like Zcash, I think, you know, Naval and whatever, they have a bunch of Zcash. They want to pump their bag. So they seize on this opportunity that Bitcoin's not private, enough or whatever. It's not private and quantum resistant. And here's one that is private and quantum resistant.
Buy my bags, please. Buy my bags.
So I think that's why it'll just go. But stablecoins, it's a different type of bag people are trying to pump, which is like, you know, there are businesses that will profit handsomely off stablecoins. But I guess the better part of it is that the token itself doesn't pump.
Yeah.
They want to capture the yield.
And then, you're actually providing some utility, which is, if people use your network, at least that's real usage.
Exactly. The reason I don't think it's fad is that like, it does provide real utility.
Yeah, it's like, hey, privacy is important.
Yeah. So I thought that's what you're going to say. So, but I mean, certainly part of the like engagement with AI and tech is around that, why not just use credit cards or credit cards 2.0 or the virtual debit card or whatever? Why not use stable coins? Why use Bitcoin versus those? And, I gave a presentation last week. I mean, I talked about it in the last show because the last show was only a few days ago.
That's right.
It tried to tease out why Bitcoin. And I think it's the best articulation to date that we've produced. I think it needs to get stronger still. But anyway. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's your take, DK? I mean, I think you had a good take in our chat, which is maybe there's a way to focus more on open source and we have an open payment network and an open identity system. Like, yeah, I mean, how, if you could wave a magic wand, would you change our approach to get more, of people from places like Anthropic and other, serious companies interested?
Yeah, I think using something with some open source framing can be helpful because it's at the core of what everything we touch or do or care about, right? has some open source component to it. And Bitcoin is open source money. And there's other people attempting to do open source monies that are not as credibly neutral as Bitcoin. But definitely Bitcoin is a private money that's not a private company, right? And I think, you know, how AI evolves.
I think it's a public money, but that's a that's a great topic itself.
Which to plug one show, if you guys never listened to my interview with Ben Ark from back in the day, we go ad nauseum about this topic of Bitcoin is in fact a new form of political philosophy because it is a commons which enables private property. And it's extreme, like that to me is one of the biggest stories of Bitcoin is it's new. It literally, we've never seen anything like this in history before. It's elements of open source, elements of free market capitalism, but you need both.
But I'm sure DK, you and I probably 100% agree on this particular topic. But the reason I jumped on that is I've seen government or people who work for government who are critics call Bitcoin private money and position it as like if it's not good for the people.
Hmm.
Yeah,
I see.
The way they position it, it's private money, basically helping insiders and not helping the public good. Whereas right. public money, like the U.S. dollar, is for the people. Hmm. And it's good for all people and doesn't have these insiders. That's how
exactly. Public private get redefined. We should go on that. But I do think that one caveat I should make in everything that I'm saying, and I think everyone we're saying, I'm not saying, by the way, that Bitcoin is a utopia and that there aren't scammy people involved in Bitcoin, that there aren't insiders who do, like none of this stuff is like completely obviously black and white. Like there are, of course, you know, people that will benefit more in the early days. And this is a much longer conversation, but like, I'm not saying, like, oh, anyone that touches Bitcoin is good. Anyone that touches anything else is bad. Like there's always, you know, unsavory actors and savory actors.
You mentioned insiders. There are no insiders in Bitcoin. There may be insiders in how the fiat
whales.
System, still wouldn't call that an insider.
Well, some people would. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but like, yeah.
But insider is kind of using inside information and relationships to exploit an arbitrage, right?
Yeah, but I think what I hear commonly from people, while I agree with you in principle, is they say, oh, that's that thing where if you, you know, whatever, you were either lucky or you were buying drugs on Silk Road in 2014 or earlier, then you basically got huge bags and now you're like, whatever, like a billionaire from this thing. That doesn't seem fair. I'm not saying that's correct, but that is a common narrative that I hear in the insider piece.
I would just caution using the term insider because I think it implies a little bit more of a shadowy super coder network. You know, it suggests
that Elizabeth Warren
would really have. Yeah, it's a public good. It's open source. It's available for everybody to audit. But there's certainly people who are going to take advantage of it with insider access to how the fiat system wraps it.
Yeah,
I think that's a fair question to ask or concern to have.
So, and back at the topic like Bitcoin brand and stuff like that, I wanted to speak more about a couple of recent experiences at Presidio. Yep. Bitcoin. I already spoke about Elon University students coming here a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, students from University of Chicago came here. So it's so awesome to engage young people who are on the cusp of starting their own careers and just seeing what's on their mind and what are their questions, what are their hopes and dreams, what are their concerns, fears. But
Chicago has a long history of economics study, right?
Hayek and
what does?
Chicago.
University of Chicago?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Chicago School of Economics for a reason.
Okay, so there's that. Also, I learned this after speaking to the students, but this group of students yesterday from University of Chicago were doing a one-year program on digital assets. Hmm. Okay? So here's what I find...
What is a digital asset to start?
Astonishing from these two... Well, I'm actually unsurprised but sad about these two experiences. They, like, none of them saw any value in Bitcoin. Most had not studied Bitcoin. And that's why when I already was sad. And then when I learned that they're actually in the digital assets program at a top-tier university... and apparently these students are like, you know, they're like cream of the crop, like 1600 SAT, and they went to the elite like high schools and everything, and you know, America's brightest, and you know, our best opportunity, and like they're studying digital assets, and they don't even know anything about Bitcoin, and the sophistication of their questions are like beginner questions, and I'm not calling them out on their dumb questions. They're completely reasonable. They're good questions and reasonable questions.
It's
if
just
you're
shocking.
Just learning.
Yeah.
So they're not dumb questions. It's just that it's like, wow, they're asking they really don't know much about it.
Did they have a lot of depth on some other aspect of digital assets?
I don't know. I didn't learn until after I spoke to them that they were in the digital assets program. I just thought it was a collection of students in terms of like coming from different disciplines. So it wasn't like this is the computer science group or, you know, or economics. It was a cross-discipline set of students, but the one bond tying them together that I learned after the fact was that they're all taking this one-year digital assets program, which I can only guess is covers stablecoins.
Okay.
Right?
Because, so it's a stablecoin.
Because both groups of students, like one of the top of mind questions is compliance, like money laundering. How do you catch the bad guys? I think it's very notable. Again, it's a very reasonable question. It's a good discussion to have. Mm-hmm. And public policy matters and catching criminals matters. So it's not, again, not a dumb question. It's just notable to me that that's top of mind for them.
Right.
And not like freedom, financial access, right. Geopolitics, like neutral right. money for the world. And like the immense power the U.S. has with the U.S. dollar. None of that is top of mind for them.
Well, so to be clear, that is not actually, sadly, is not at all surprising to me. I'm going to give another shout out. I mentioned on the show maybe a year ago, but Croesus's essay, I guess now he's out publicly, yes. Jesse Meyer's essay, Why the Yuppie Elite Dismiss Bitcoin. It is so spot on. If you haven't read this essay, read this essay. It's very simple. The idea is there's an axis to grok Bitcoin. You need to be, you know, intelligent axis. You need to be intelligent. There's a lot of like, you know, difficult ideas to grok. But then there's another axis, which is, has the system benefit? Like, do you trust the system? And for people that went to the University of Chicago or some of these elite schools, the system works just fine for them. And so the system is working really well.
People at Google.
Yes. And so that is why they're not questioning, because they're like, well, I look around me and like me and my friends are all like balling out. Like, what are you talking about, Steve? Yeah. Now, the thing that I do think should get those kids interested, like maybe they're never going to care about financial freedom for someone in, you know, whatever, India or something like that. But what should get them excited, and I think the real opportunity, and increasingly, I know I just had my Alex Jones rant, but I'm trying to be more equanimous and look at the world as it is and not just get angry, but like figure out this actual solution, is what these people do like is making money, getting more power and prestige. That's why they're at a school like that. And so if we can come and say the real opportunity for the next, you know, GDP growth of the world is, you know, agentic commerce online, and agentic commerce is best served by Bitcoin. And oh, by the way, you want to get in YC and you want to whatever, be the next guy on the cover of this thing, like do agentic commerce. And this is the only way you can do that. I think that those kinds of solutions of like what new markets, what new opportunities. Yep. I mean, and I say this in a way that sounds very dismissive, and I should probably say I don't mean to be dismissive. Like it's very natural that people want to be part of something. I do. We all do. Like something, part of something successful and something that, you know, is exciting and growing and changing the world. So I think the more we can focus on the new markets this opens up, the better for people like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I these two experiences, I don't think are one-offs. I think they are representative samples. I think, you know, if we had 20 more university sets of or groups of university students come here, we'd see the same thing,
right.
Which is why I'm not surprised, but sad.
Yeah.
And so it just makes me wonder, what will it take for students and their professors and the academic environments to prioritize this or to be curious? So from an individual student standpoint, what will it take for them to become curious and take the time to study and learn? And then like from an overall program standpoint to prioritize it, you know, maybe it'll take Bitcoin becoming a $1 trillion asset class. Maybe it'll take there to be 500 million Bitcoin owners around the world.
Right.
Maybe it'll take like United States senators and the president to endorse it. maybe it'll take major financial companies like BlackRock to produce products for it. Oh, wait, we already achieved all those. So like what?
Steve's been practicing that little monologue right there.
I was wondering where you were going with that.
Ten times last night.
Exactly.
No, no, but I mean, like, so it does make me, what does it take? Does it have to reach 10 trillion, 100 trillion? I mean, I think undoubtedly, if people are paying Bitcoin for their AI agent or for their coffee or whatever, mm-hmm. if humans have a daily touch point with Bitcoin, then all of a sudden they're going to care. But I still don't see why we have to get to that point. Like, let's say we live in a world where that never occurs,
right.
And it's only store of value,
right.
But it becomes like the global reserve currency, and like what most people in Bitcoin believe will occur. Like, at what point along the trajectory to it is cemented as the global reserve currency, do people become smart people at universities become curious? I don't know.
Like, I mean, to me, as I'm rethinking this, the opportunity to reach people like that today, I do think the agentic commerce and like tech disruption opportunity is interesting. But frankly, it's the sailor pitch. Like, I think if you go to them and you say, hey kids, you see all the bond market out there, see what that's doing? What if I told you get 11.5%? They say, 11.5%? Ooh, that's spicy. How do you do that? And you say, there's this thing. It's, crypto scam. And they see, like, honestly, what's going to happen, I think, is over the next couple of years, Saylor's going to keep making all of his payments. He's going to continue. Like, if he continues to pay 2 to 3x what everyone else in fixed income can pay, then eventually they're going to start to say, how is he doing this? Like, why is this?
I disagree, though, because like, for it to work,
yeah.
You have to believe Bitcoin will continue to appreciate at least 11%. And like, yeah. For it to work the way Strategy thinks it'll appreciate 20 to 30%, mm-hmm. It'll be no problem paying off Stretch, and they'll profit handsomely. So MSTR goes up as well.
Yeah.
That's probably what we believe too. But if you simply don't even see the value of Bitcoin or get the point, or you're starting at zero, then you'll ask, how does it pay? I mean, anytime something offers a lot of yield, you got to be like, ask, how does it?
Exactly.
Yeah, but the way it does is you have to believe Bitcoin's going to appreciate.
DK has a good point. A lot of people aren't going to be doing
it. I mean, Max and I had a talk with somebody who, savvy individual, came by PB, and he was like, so how are you guys getting yield on your Bitcoin? And we were just like, what? No.
Yeah.
So I don't think students would be persuaded, or anyone, frankly. I mean, not just students. I have a set of friends who don't believe in Bitcoin. They love to make money, though, so they're always chasing like yields and like this one friend even was like going to maybe take their stock and park it in Kraken, because apparently if you take, you can now take traditional stock and put it in a crypto casino, and you get like 2% back or something. So he is asking me if, like, I thought that was a scam. And I'm like, well, out of all the crypto casinos, I like and trust Kraken, like Jesse Powell and Kraken, yeah, probably the most, but it's still a crypto casino. And I'm like, I would deeply study what it means if they go under, what happens to your stock certificates, what kind of like U.S. protections are there for that? If there's solid protections, maybe it's no risk. But if there's not, it's like, I wouldn't do that for 2%. Even just the hassle. That anyway, I'm like, if you're willing to do this, why don't you put your money in, or some money in Stretch?
Yeah.
And then we went through this whole like, he doesn't believe in Bitcoin, and he's like, he thinks it's a scam.
Yeah.
So I would not call it a scam. It will fail though if Bitcoin.
Yeah, if it doesn't go up,
goes to zero.
Correct.
Yeah. Long term, then
totally. But in the meantime, I mean, yes, like the more Bitcoin price rises, which is a function ultimately of adoption, so all the things we're excited about, that's all necessary. But in the meantime, we talked about this last week. All of the buying, I mean, one of the major bids on Bitcoin was, in fact, several thousand a day coming from MicroStrategy from selling Stretch. So they sell, whatever, $200 million, they just turn around and buy more Bitcoin with that, which, I understand for someone listening to this, like, that sounds like a pyramid scheme. And it's like, well, they all are. So is the dollar. But as long as you believe Bitcoin's not going to zero, as long as you believe in the long run, the adoption grows over that, then you're going to be fine. But I think my broader point is for people at a place like the University of Chicago or whatever, some of these elite schools or people that want jobs in finance, right? If people want jobs in finance, maybe they don't get the gold bug narrative. Maybe they don't question why the system needs to have a neutral reserve currency, all these things. But if they see one product in the market that is just like an economic black hole and like all of a sudden, you know, all private credit is just like flooding to this one instrument that's paying 2 to 3x. And they're like, eventually, if it doesn't fail, eventually they'll come and say, huh, why is that?
Maybe, but Bitcoin's like, it's hit 2 trillion. It's close to, I don't even know what it is now, but you know, it's close to 2 trillion. And that's a notable achievement, right? Totally. But that hasn't,
well, I mean, popular conversation now compared to what it may have been, you know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago, right? Like, so
I agree.
The popular conversation is making progress.
I definitely agree overall. But in speaking to these students, and again, I believe they're representative of like general population of students, that segment of people, the conversation felt like 2013 level of awareness, curiosity, and excitement,
and even when we had our
sophistication of questions,
our AI conversation too. Even though that was a little bit more advanced, but the questions we were getting asked were like, "What about ESG and like mining?" Like very like this stuff's been
which is
a
even
decade.
Which is far more concerning than whether they're Bitcoiners or not.
Right.
We with the yesterday's group of students, it was exclusively about Bitcoin. I mean, I said I'd be happy to answer questions about career, AI, whatever they want to, but all their questions were about Bitcoin.
That's cool.
So we didn't get an AI, but there's a little bit of, I gave like an agentic commerce example on one of my Bitcoin answers, and like you could just see that they had no idea what I was talking about, or that it was like, sounded like total sci-fi.
Really?
So I get the sense that skill set, curiosity, and time spent on AI tools was probably similar to the other student group, which that is very concerning because maybe they don't invest in Bitcoin early enough or they don't get it until 10 years too late or whatever, but whatever. But if they don't get on the AI train and learn how to use these tools, they are going to be suffering in the job market and like soon, like now, when they graduate. Over the next few years.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
The number one piece of advice to students is get on the AI train and spend a lot of time on these tools to level up.
Are they not even using like LLMs for their homework and stuff? Like,
I don't know. I mean, I didn't talk to them about AI.
That's shocking.
Only the previous group.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it though, you got to look at the incentives like of a university professor who's probably highly influencing the kinds of things that they spend their time. The university professor doesn't get a lot of credit for finding stuff early or like being early to a new technology or really getting into the weeds of the details of it, right? They're a little bit more historical or backward looking. So I'm not here to defend that position, but I'm just saying I think that context is probably why it results in the way it does. And so I think there's a couple ways to think about how you fix that. And it's mostly messages that get shared outside of the core system. So I think, you know, having a podcast is one way to share messages outside of the kind of, you know, the hallowed halls of the university. And then I think also just encountering Bitcoin in the real world is another big way to get people curious about it. And they might start, like, if they started seeing it in all of their favorite applications, like, you know, they're using TikTok or they're buying a domain on Unhuman or something.
Yeah.
Then they start asking the professor, well, what about Bitcoin? Then the professor kind of has to figure it out and come up with an answer. So I almost feel like the ideas have to be incepted from outside the system and kind of work their way back because just of how the incentives of a traditional university work.
I want to mention something that I think ties into Nick a little bit and MDK and stuff we talked about with him.
All right, there we go. Nine straight episodes.
But it's not just him specifically. You know, remember we talked a few months ago about this idea of can you enable, you know, the kids in class, like most kids, I think sadly we would argue at school are probably just wasting their time at this point. But like the smart kids that maybe, you know, are just sitting there and they understand how Claude works and they're making businesses, but they can't register for a bank account or credit card because they're 16. Like Bitcoin serves a real need for them. I saw Anjali show me, I don't remember who this was, but someone had the idea for a school where they guaranteed you would make $1 million by the time you graduate, which that sounds a little scammy. And it was extremely expensive, like clearly, you know, geared towards like high-end tech people. But the point is, I think there's something.
$1 million tuition.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Buy my course, you'll make $1 million, but first pay me 10. So, dropping the specifics of that. But I thought the idea was really cool, is like, instead of wasting time and a bunch of stuff that you're never actually going to use, the idea is you get one-on-one coaching, mentorship, or whatever to like, all right, we're going to help you test, create business ideas, test business ideas, learn to use the tools where you can go and build these businesses, iterate quickly. And, you know, doing that as a young person, basically focusing on helping people become entrepreneurs. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's a super high-touch, expensive version. But I do think this ties into our idea that we discussed with Nick, what things like Bitcoin, frankly, AI is democratizing and technology yep. enable, which is like, you know, instead of just getting mad of like, oh, it sucks that, you know, these kids are paying huge tuition, getting scammed, and they're not learning. It's like, okay, that's the old world is dying. Instead of getting angry and shaking our fist, how do we instead get these kids, align the incentives such that maybe you don't go to school or you are in school? You know, your goal is, how do I build something that people actually use? And then my quote unquote job stems from that.
But I think you need some sort of credibility layer, you know, in that some
Which
sort of brand
or
credibility.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Nope. I was just going to say, I think to get people to transit, I think somebody, I've heard it quoted that, you know, to raise a kid with all the school and everything, it can be like $700K to $1 million.
What?
I don't know, for like 20 years of, Steve, does that sound about right? Or,
well, if someone sends their kids to private schools.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So think about all those dollars that are going out that are probably mostly being wasted. And if you could take that as like seed capital
yeah.
for your startup that you start when you're 12 years old or something, you could just imagine an entirely different path, but it's just so different. People have to rethink all their prior assumptions about what is education, what does it mean to be educated.
So how would you do that?
Like
if you were trying to, for this sort of navigational or this transitional phase, navigate it with something that gets kids being more entrepreneurial, but also helps with that, whatever, the seal of acceptability.
I guess the kids would love it, but the parents would hate it.
Exactly.
I think the main problem to solve is that parents say like, oh, this is a reasonable thing to do with your life, instead of like, oh, you're going to go mess around with some AI and virtual friend or something, you know?
I just wanted to address, before the comments scroll off the screen, let's see. Diana says, Steve, offer an online workshop to the school explaining all this. But I'll say no to that. And the reason why is there's ample content that people have created already. So it's not like a lack of content. And if Max were to do this, or me or DK or whatever, I'm sure, you know, we put together a thoughtful, good course or class or whatever, but so have others. And that's not solving the problem. I mean, to the uninitiated Bitcoin, one of the challenges to learn is that because there's no central authority, you don't know who to trust, what to believe. You don't just go to like Bitcoin.com and like...
Bitcoin.com was in fact a scam.
It literally like was telling people to not buy Bitcoin.
It was another shitcoin.
Right? So you don't know where to go. So sure, some people might look at one of our content, but it's... Anyway, there needs to be an alternative solution. And let's see. Then J-Dub-I says, I don't think anyone really wants to pay Bitcoin to strangers, especially to bots, and follows up with, you can pay strangers and bots with fiat because it's a joke currency that isn't a good investment to hold. So that is a very common sentiment, I think. We've talked a little bit before in the show about it, but it doesn't make sense to me in this, because if fiat is a joke currency, if I'm selling something to someone, why do I want to receive the joke currency versus the better currency?
Well,
right?
to be fair, sellers, you have to pay your whatever,
well, right.
your
suppliers, I mean,
that's what, the next
but think playing this out long term. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying, obviously that's not the case today,
right?
Because people don't generally use Bitcoin to pay. I'm saying that if you hold the view that dollars are a joke currency and Bitcoin is something you want, then sellers, when they're selling something, want the currency that is more desirable.
Right.
Right. And if I'm selling something, so then I might offer an incentive for you to pay me in the better currency, or I might not sell you my product or service if you don't pay me in the better currency. So I do think that dynamic will play out over time.
But you need volatility in the meantime. Like, and I think something people have to remember is Bitcoin, you know, you would never going to go from like a thing dropped on the internet to global reserve currency in one giant straight shot. And so I think that, remember, we're still in the store value early phase, in my opinion, which is why I keep coming back to the MicroStrategy thing is like, people want stability. They want yield. One day, everything you're saying will happen, I believe, right? But I mean, that could be decades.
I agree, but it's not for the reason stated there. Yeah. It's not because it's a joke current. I mean, the thinking there, or my interpretation of that is like, Bitcoin's better currency, so there's no way I'm going to pay in Bitcoin. But that is, I think, faulty long-term thinking because, yes, Bitcoin's a better currency, so the seller is going to demand it. And
also, an agent or a bot may not have fiat rails to interact with.
But then also, it also implies in that view that the spender holds both currencies. So if you, why are you holding a joke currency?
Right.
Hold it all in Bitcoin. And again, this is not advice that everyone should have 100% of their assets in Bitcoin.
Just 100%.
But in terms of a long-term view, if you have joke currency and a solid currency, why are you even holding the joke currency to spend it in? You only have the good currency, or you like, it makes sense to only have the good currency, and then you obviously have to spend in the good currency.
We've talked about this before. I think that in addition to the volatility argument, I think the thing that changes that is the tax law.
Right.
Once you're not taxed, then everything you're saying is true.
I'm not describing the world today. There's all these barriers. We talk about them all the time. Right. We're going to get through all of them. It takes a long time, though.
Right.
But just the theoretical discussion of it, I don't buy this argument of like no one's going to spend Bitcoin because it's a better currency.
Yeah,
that makes no sense.
The platonic
I think
ideal
the framing that I don't hear a lot of people say, which I think Steve, you pointed out once, is think about like don't think about the starting point is who you're paying or whatever. Think about the starting point is I have a certain amount of resources, and that can be denominated in whatever format I want. Right, like I can hold them as Bitcoin, I can hold them as U.S. dollars, I can hold it as real estate or something. But I have that pile. And now I can just decide the allocations and I can convert to whatever I want in order to pay something. But if you really zoom out and think about it as a pool of resources instead of I have Bitcoin or I have dollars, then you can sort of choose the mix and choose the payment mechanism that you need based on what your seller is willing to exchange for.
One additional comment here from Deanna. But they came to your space at PBJ, so they obviously found it credible. That's a good point. And so kudos to the students and and their professors for even coming here, right? It does show, they spent their time. They could have, or they did visit others, but I mean, they had to pick like a few spots in the Bay Area to visit, and they chose here. So
that's cool.
Absolute shout out for them coming here, and hopefully they took away something that helps them.
Yeah. They could have spent all their time at the Tempo headquarters. So,
by the way, as you're mentioning that, what was this MPP? I know we don't have it listed as a major topic, but did anybody look into that? I think it's something like MCP for payments or a payment protocol for AI.
Yeah, it was announced this morning.
Tempo thing.
Stripe and Tempo announced it. It actually looks like pretty good news, my first take. And I immediately reached out to folks that are working on Tempo because it's not just stablecoins. There's like a Lightning template.
Really?
And so...
Shit!
So I'm like, oh, well, Spiral isn't involved in that. Who worked on that? So
coming home.
My understanding, like to David Marcus and LightSpark's credit, they worked on it. And it does.
Oh, good.
I'm very happy to see.
Yes.
That again, I need to do a deep dive study, so I might come back with some critique. But it appears to be Lightning, not Spark specific. So I like that it's Lightning, and they're making they have a Spark implementation in their product. That's great.
Sure.
But the spec is open. That's great.
And it should work with other Lightning implementations and other products that support Lightning. So that is amazing. I've engaged with folks from Paradigm and Stripe and Tempo, and they seem enthusiastic about, or they like, I asked them if it's going to be treated as like a tier one thing versus like stablecoins and stuff, and they didn't even think that was like a good framing of the question, because it sounds like that like the governance of this, there's not going to be like a governance where like you know, some things are prioritized over other solutions, but it's more just like free market. Like if the people integrating MPP, if they include the Lightning, a Lightning solution, then it's going to work.
That's awesome.
It's, you know, it's more of an attitude of like builders build, and if people build it and integrate it and support it, then it's going
to
be.
How does it interact? Is it like a peer or an alternative to X402, L402, or is it like integrated with it somehow?
I mean, it just was announced this morning, and I have a few minutes of research on it. So, but my understanding is that it's a competitor to X402.
Okay.
And okay. Well, and then, you know, a competitor to L402, but if there is strong Lightning support, then, I mean, we're going to have to see, like, I think my early take is that supporting, like, as a Bitcoin advocate, we should continue to advocate for L402, but it appears like this is a nice alternative, too, that should work with Bitcoin wallets.
That's amazing. And there's, I'm sure, an opportunity to even bridge this. Like if you have some bridge to L42, I don't know if anyone's looked at that yet.
I guess my understanding of how it would work and my hope is that, yeah, if there's like two services, one supports L402 and the other supports MPP with the Lightning extension or whatever.
Yeah.
And then we all have Lightning wallets, or our agent has like a MDK wallet,
yeah,
that it could pay either of them totally fine and it would work.
That's awesome. And, you know, if so, great work to the LightSpark team, because I know that they've been one of the few sort of organizations that has whatever some of these, relationships in the crypto world as well. And to build that bridge is awesome. And also, you know, to everything we were saying, it's like, you know, I've been very frustrated with, you know, crypto people, but not all of them are necessarily bad actors. Like Paradigm is, you know, full of really smart people. I would love to see them come back and start helping to contribute with the Bitcoin Lightning ecosystem. So that'd be awesome. Maybe this is a first step.
Just reading some of the comments here. What about paying in Bitcoin representation? Idiots, that holds in Bitcoin. Yeah, I don't really understand that.
I'll just jump in while you're reading that. Another shout out I was going to give to the branding discussion. Yeah. I like the, you know, we've talked before about the Flint community, and I feel like the Flint community is a very nice balance. It doesn't have the word Bitcoin in it. It's not a Bitcoin-centric brand, but it does have some Bitcoin ethos to it. I think mostly we removed the word Bitcoin from the webpage, but when you're involved,
each instance is very intentional and
right,
relatively subtle.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's, it kind of hits a nice tone of like it attracts the right people, and it gets, you know, you don't have to sort of, you're not re-prosecuting, you know, the discussions that might be happening in public, but it does so without a brand that really feels like it's pushing Bitcoin. It's more of a builder type brand. So
DK, two questions for you. As you think about, you know, with people that are, for example, I know you talk with a lot of AI people, if you were trying to get them interested in what we were doing, you mentioned a lot of these folks in Silicon Valley in general, like FOSS, free and open source software. However, I think it's worth noting that, like, what does open source even mean anymore with LLMs? Mm-hmm. That's changing a yeah. lot. Yeah. What would be your dream event? Let's say you're getting a lot of folks that you work with in your other sort of investing life. Like, how would you pitch them to even, I don't know, like if you were trying to get them to come to, you know, an event at PB or whatever and like learn about what we're doing, where would you even start? Would you use the word FOSS? Would you use a different open?
Yeah, you know, I think analog? It really depends a lot on the audience. Like, you know, Steve was talking about how like Lightning makes sense in some contexts and not in others.
Right.
So I think it always comes down to the topic. But I don't think people are generally, or it comes down to the audience. I don't think people are generally looking to learn more about Bitcoin in it unless they see something new that they can do with it.
Right.
So I think the biggest thing that I think would attract, you know, kind of a traditional builder or an AI builder is some of the stuff that I think, you know, like what Ori is doing,
yeah,
you know, is a MDK. They're showing how easy it is to build with Bitcoin. And then if some projects take off and people start demanding it, then I think more traditional builders who are kind of agnostic to how stuff gets paid, they're just like, I want to build this cool tool or this new AI. I think they'll be attracted because people are demanding it. But I don't think it's necessarily super productive to try to like convince people to be interested. Mm-hmm. I'm always open to sharing and talking about it, but I think most people just, you know, they kind of have to come to it because something about it piques their curiosity, and just the pure store value idea is not probably enough.
Let me reframe that with the open source thing. For people that are interested traditionally in open source software, do you think is FOSS, like, hey, is that even still, well, one, does FOSS even exist anymore? And it's like, is that still worth using as like a framework?
Is all software FOSS?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, let's talk, that was where I was hoping we'd spend most of our time today, and now we have 10 minutes left or whatever. Amazing. Maybe let's dive into that. Yeah. Start that discussion. I think this will be a multi-episode ongoing discussion.
The next year.
How does FOSS, free open source software, how is AI going to impact that? How is it already impacting it? And does it change the value of it over time? Where do we see that going? I mean, I'll start, but very curious to hear what your guys' views are. I mean, the free part means that it means that it's freely available, but it doesn't necessarily mean free in cost. There's a lot of different licenses, and you can get in debates about what level of permissiveness is needed for FOSS software, but the most permissive license is like MIT and Apache 2. It is free. And
free as in freedom, not free as in beer.
It's free as in freedom, and it's free as in beer, those. Wow. But then other open source licenses are restrictive in terms of how you can use it, what you can use it for, and they're often applied for a couple reasons. One, if you want to ensure that any modification is upstreamed into the main repo, you might put a more like a copy left type license on it. Or if your real goal is just publishing the code for transparency reasons, but you still want any real usage of it from another business to pay you. So if you want to use the software I wrote and published for your business and you're making money, let's have a business development arrangement, right? Mm. So that's historically how this works and what what's involved. But how does it change with AI? I guess so I'll start off with why I don't think some things that won't change. I mean, like, I still think it'll be very valuable for the world for code that's produced to make it available. And that's important for transparency and audit reasons and reproducible builds. And, if it's proprietary and closed and you can't see it, like that's a scary world. Even if humans aren't the ones doing the review audits in security, but I'd want my bots, I did they want my human team or my bot team or a combination of that team to ensure any software that I'm using is high quality and secure. And it obviously depends on the application. If it's a one-off disposable piece of software that I'm doing for a to-do list or whatever, it doesn't need like flight level FAA kind of security, right, or Bitcoin private keys or whatever. But if it is super critical software, then that's a must. So I still think we want to encourage software to be open. Plus, there's another benefit of open software is that you can build on the shoulders. You can, sit on the shoulders of others and build even better things. And everyone benefits from that. So I think that still remains true. So from that perspective, I don't really see why it changes things. But what does change is like, who's looking at the code? Are humans still looking at the code? Are agents? So,
how is the code used in remixes?
So
do these licenses even make sense in this world? Because like, if you have, isn't it GPL that if you if you use GPL, then you have to sort of also be GPL.
Yeah.
And so is there really any coding model that has no GPL software in its training data? Do you think that's true? I don't think that's true.
No.
So then what if I find a GPL licensed product and I say, I like this product. Let's rebuild it with the same goals, but don't use any of the software. I could do that prompt, but presumably the training data is using the stuff that kind of implies the GPL should propagate, which probably doesn't actually end up happening today. So I think even the concept of all these different open source licenses and styles of use may get redefined when most software is being written by bots or by agents. Yeah.
And what, so yeah, I think the legal and licensing aspect, I definitely agree, will probably be disrupted, changed. But what about the value? Does that
change? That makes everything become effectively MIT-ish, right?
Well, not if I have like tons of software is closed source.
Sure. Okay. Closed source is closed source. But I'm saying anything open source, you can almost argue that you can.
I agree with that. But what about closed source? So like, number one, is there a shift in value, whether it be increase or decrease, mm-hmm. for the notion of boss? That's one question I have. And then two, do we think that more proprietary closed software will become open, or that more, or the opposite? Because you all of a sudden, I've seen some people, like a narrative start, I think JB55 is saying like, maybe he doesn't want to do open source software now, because now it's so swift to copy other people's work and produce a competing, a copy of the product and then quickly better, that maybe he doesn't even want to do open source anymore. So do we see a shift back towards closed source?
And I also think, I mean, there's like even a deeper question of like, well, what actually matters? Like, where is the value accrue? Where is the value created and where is it accrue? And like, what, to me, the most important thing of FOSS is the transparency, right? And so one thing I would want to say is, how do I utilize transparent services on the internet? But one concern I have is like, you know, I don't even know if the code even really matters. I get JB55's point that like, you know, I do agree with him, at least in this current stage, it's trivial to copy an idea, but I mean, it's quite hard to maybe go from like 99% good to like that extra je ne sais quoi that he has to make something really beautiful. And maybe that's what he wants to sort of defend. I get that point. But like, dude, if you're AGI pilled 2 years out, JB55 is great. But like, what about when, you know, I am to him as he is to the whatever Claude, you know, whatever, 10. I
was going to say, take another layer of abstraction. Did you guys see the back and forth between Chamath and Saylor?
No.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, no, I thought
off.
This was...
I'm off Twitter, bro.
So, somebody shared it to me. Chamath wrote essay.
I think DK shared it with us.
Or maybe I shared it with you.
I did see it then, yeah.
So effectively, you know, I kind of skimmed, but Chamath wrote some essay basically about how the future value of companies, you know, you kind of pay for discounted cash flow for future value that you assume the company is going to capture. And that the periods, maybe, I don't know all the details of what the essay said, but maybe the periods you would assume today are 30 years of future cash flow. And maybe we need to really shorten that to something like, is it 5 years, or is it maybe there's no duration on that, which really changes the valuations of public markets. The reason I point this out within the conversation is because that's like a one layer of abstraction away, you know, it's a company instead of just a software project. But I think they're kind of cousins of each other, sort of somehow close relatives.
Well,
and
this is something that we've talked about on the show for a very long time. You know, when I put on my investor hat and I'm not just out here Alex Jones ranting, I actually think about like how to allocate capital, right? It's like, I think in the long run, it's like, okay, you want to go. And by the way, like, I want everything. I want deflation and all kinds of goods and services so that everyone wins. Like,
yeah, abundance everywhere. Yeah.
That's a big part of my just like personal worldview and what I want to see happen. But when I do, I put on my capital allocation hat, my question is, okay, well, you know, the value capture is going to go to where there's scarcity. So in this coming world, you know, the only things that I've been able to come up with that are scarce are the infrastructure running it all. So if you've got, you know, for now, the compute, the energy, although that obviously depreciates over time. Bitcoin, which is digital capital, assuming that doesn't get, you know, broken in some way, shape, or form. The Lightning Network position, because that's the position in the railroad railroad network and human attention, or human and potentially bot attention, whatever that ends up meaning. But the last one,
what
human
about
bot,
the single railroad to space?
DK is an Elon Maxi. I'm not even going to address that. I'm the Elon Maxi. DK is not. But for whatever reason, he's not yet on the Elon train. He'll get,
no, I like the space thing.
No, and every time you always go, you always make a dig at Elon. No. But I like him. You know, I like
space
it.
Thing.
Yeah. No, it's got space. It's great. Anyways, but my broader point is when you look at those four things, since attention is the one that all of software, media, the internet, services, everything is basically competing for that. And by the way, something else I think is worth talking about is this idea of like, you know, as like the basic stuff is increasingly taken care of by robots and by AI. So it's like, okay, food, water, shelter, all that increasingly, you know, there's deflation. Everyone gets access to the basics. That's awesome. And maybe even, as Elon says, universal high income. That'd be awesome. What do humans end up doing? Well, you know, for better or for worse, we, and I think there was a Chris Pike essay I liked about this where he was just like, you know, we didn't used to have pro sports teams. And then we have more leisure time. Now we have pro sports teams. Mm-hmm. Now Steve is, you know, on here flexing his arms in his Iowa State shirt. That would not have been possible 100 years ago. And so there will be all kinds of new, like, humans have an infinity of ways that they can flex on each other, which is not my favorite way of saying it, but that's kind of what he was getting at. Or, you know, play with each other or create new games, new sports, new status competition. Like, I'm not worried about that. That's where humans are going to end up going. And maybe the robots make sure no one starves. Cool. But in that world, that is so hard, particularly where we are today, to predict as an investor. I would not want to be picking, well, this is what's going to, you know, win the next status game, because the next status game is changing every single day. So I would not want to be betting on companies that I think is going to win, that will win in the human attention or the machine attention economy, because I don't think there's any durable advantage there. And I think that's what Chamath was getting at. So as an investor, I want to own the energy infrastructure, the Bitcoin, and the Lightning Network routing position, because those are things that I see. Okay, those are moats that no one's going to erode.
Yeah. And you read Saylor's response, right? That was, he basically was like, well, if you believe all these things about the public markets, then you should be buying Bitcoin. That was kind of his conclusion.
But Chamath said it's not quantum resistant.
Right, not quantum resistant. So he's kind of on that FUD train now.
Yeah. But did he also recommend Zcash? I hear it's more private.
But getting back to open source, or AI's impact on open source, I mean, another perspective for us to discuss, since we're at time, in a future episode, but I'll plant the seed in your guys' head, and anyone listening would love to hear your thoughts. Like, does it change how Spiral like thinks about open source, the value we contribute? Right. Does it impact that? Do we need to like change course or do something differently? And you know, I brought up last week about we're thinking about an AI initiative and what can we do for open source AI. So can we apply the playbook we've used the past 6 plus 7 years or so in open source Bitcoin? A, can we apply the same playbook to AI, or what adjustments do we need to make to have success? And then B, do we even need to like revisit our playbook for Bitcoin? So I think that's a really good question.
And I think also thinking about how far can we take the auditability and where it is in? Because right now, what kind of, I mean, it excites me and concerns me is like, you know, one, you know, everyone has these amazing agents and like, I am now super Claude pilled. I love it. But I don't know, like, how do I know that Claude's not going to get, you know, poisoned over time? I don't know that. So it makes me increasingly bullish on things like what Jesse is working on with Bora, what Tony and Mark's working on with Maple and other, you know, other abilities to own your own, forget the word he always uses, fiduciary AI, someone that's actually like working on your behalf. That's super important. But even a layer deeper, can we actually get enough? Because no one really still knows how these LLMs even work. Like, you can't just be like, oh, I can point to exactly, you know, the right neuron for every action it takes that's firing. You know, how far can we get into the interpretability of this compute to be able to say, actually, no, there's a poison pill in this model and it's not over here. You know, open weights are a start, open data sets would be even better. But like, I think we actually need fundamental breakthroughs in auditing how these digital brains are even operating to
Max,
give us true.
Founders, you should know a week from today. Because
is that so?
There's a company, former OpenAI guy. Do you know this company?
Yeah, okay. I'm one of my other friends is also an investor. Yeah, I'll be there.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Okay, good.
So you mentioned or touched on like sovereignty, like what Bora is doing, and maybe AI, maybe a little bit more privacy, but like that's one way to like should the focal point be on sovereignty instead of FOSS? And that doesn't mean it's not FOSS still, but like, are you optimizing for FOSS or optimizing for sovereignty? Is there a shift there? And does that actually change anything if you flip it? So I think that's another thread that I'll think more about, would love to discuss with you guys.
Good topic for next week.
On the next Presidio Sovereignty Jam.
Yeah. PSJ.
PSJ.
That's roll off the tongue quite as well. But
isn't there like a famous European football team that PSJ or something?
I don't know.
PSJ.
If not, once we have more leisure time, there will be. So.
Oh my gosh. We need to level up our sports on this show.
Exactly. DK, we'll put you in charge of that for next week. All right, guys.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.